Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the Opel Commercial Vehicles range. We have your van.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
So our resident parenting expert, clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman joins me now. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm very well. And we're going to go straight to listeners' questions because, as always, we have so many. And we're going to start with a little girl who's nearly six. This is an unusual one, but I find this quite distressing when I read about it. Little girl, nearly six. She's fabulous, full of energy, enthusiasm and divilment, but she's afraid of being on her own anywhere, her bedroom, the toilet, going up the stairs in her house. She won't stay in her own bed at night because when she wakes up, she's terrified. She does fall asleep on her own so long as her dad or I are outside the door. Her big sister's in the room next door. The doors are open. The lights are on. We've tried night lights. We've tried checking all the nooks and crannies of her home, of her room before she goes to sleep. Nothing seems to help. In school, she's very happy. She has lots of friends. She does lots of extracurricular activities. Have you any idea what's going on in her little head and what I can do to help her get over her fear of being alone?
Oh, goodness. You're hard to go out to her, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's often difficult to try and, you know, establish what it is for small children that might be frightening them, because in many ways, you know, young children are afraid of all the things that we might expect in terms of monsters and robbers and all that kind of stuff. So it could be that it's something as typical as that. It may be that their daughter has just picked up on maybe a bit of the underlying anxiety or stresses of the whole coronavirus and how we're all coping and changes that it might have led to their family, you know, missing school for those few months and now, you know, obviously being back in school, but, you know, maybe things just being a little bit different. So in terms of understanding exactly what it is, it's tricky because she's only five, nearly six, and so she's not going to be able to describe it well. So sometimes what we can do as parents is we can guess on children's behalf. So you might just throw out a few of your ideas about things that it might be that's bothering her. And when you throw out those ideas, it's useful to throw them out with a kind of a questioning tone. So you might say something like, God, I often wonder if it's been kind of, you know, really nice to be back in school, but maybe it just feels a bit different as well. And so a comment like that allows her daughter to just think a little bit about school and think about whether it's okay. And if it is okay, she'll probably go, oh, no, it's great, ma'am. It's great to be back. I love school. You know, I love school. But if it is that it's different and it feels weird, then she's quite likely to say, oh, yeah, it's all very strange now because I don't get to play with my best friends anymore because they're in a different pod or bubble or whatever it is that's going on in the school. In terms of helping her, I think, you know, it sounds like they're doing pretty much all the right things because they are offering her their physical security at nighttime. So they're willing to sit outside the door. What they could do, what they could institute with her if they wanted to move that along is to offer to do what I would call a checking visit, which is where they say to her, we'll sit outside the door for 2 minutes, then we're going to go away for 2 minutes, and then we're going to come back for 2 minutes, and then we're going to go away for 2 minutes, and then we're going to come back for 2 minutes. So from a parent's perspective, it's as involved as just sitting outside the door with a little bit more movement. So it's not like you're saving yourself time yet as a parent. But what you are doing is giving her that capacity to be on her own for those 2 minutes, and then she knows that you're back 2 minutes later. She'll see you in the doorway or whatever it is. And so for the start, when you introduce something like that, she'd probably kind of push it out because she will want to see, will you definitely come back? And so you could expect that she might actually stay awake a little bit longer. But as she gets used to the fact that you are reliable and trustworthy and that you do come back every time, then she begins to realize that she is okay and that she can fall asleep. And then you can begin to extend the period of time that you're away for. So you come back always to check on her, sit outside the door for about a minute and then go away maybe for 4 minutes or for 5 minutes and then come back. But again, all the time you're giving her that still reassurance of your physical presence, because that's sometimes what small children just need. You know, they just need us to be around to let them know that they're okay.
Okay, well, hopefully those tips will help. Now, somebody else who's not sleeping. My teenage daughter is so down. She started university from home. She's missing the security of school, feels everyone else has such a better life than her. She feels lonely. She wants friends. Are there any tools I can give her to stop thinking so negatively? She cries so much and is not sleeping. I would bet that is very, very common. You know, first years trying to settle into a university that they can't go to.
Yeah, first years, second years. I think a lot of college students are finding the new way of doing college very, very difficult and very isolating. My two eldest are in college, and you know they're both doing it all online, and I think it's really challenging for young people. And so I guess, in many ways, this listener's daughter is not in any way unusual. And I guess that's maybe a starting point, you know, not to necessarily treat what's happening to her as something strange or odd or necessarily even problematic, because the feelings that she have just fit with feeling lonely and isolated. And, you know, initially as a parent, particularly when you've got an older teenager or young adult, you have to just listen in the first instance, do a lot of empathetic listening where you're giving feedback saying, oh, it sounds like you're really upset, sounds like this is really difficult for you, before you then do what we normally want to rush into, which is solve the problem. And so as parents, we're quite motivated and quite practiced at solving problems, so we often just rush in there. But actually, the more you can just listen initially, and then you might actually get an invitation to help her solve the problem, or she might come to you looking for some shared problem solving about it. And that's when, as a mom or a dad, you can suggest things like contacting the student counselling services, because again, I could imagine that they will have ideas for, you know, formats that, you know, students are meeting up in a virtual way. They probably, you know all the systems within the college that will facilitate any kind of social interaction, because I think that's the big thing that young people are missing. While they still have lectures and stuff, you know, I've heard that oftentimes, even before a lecturer comes on stream on a, you know, if it's a Zoom call or a whatever, Microsoft Teams, whatever system the college is using, that oftentimes the students will just sit quietly waiting, that nobody chats in the way that you might have otherwise chatted to somebody while you're sitting in a lecture hall waiting for a lecturer to arrive. So all those things are missing for young people, and so we may not be able to replace them. And if we can't fix a problem, then the best we can offer is lots and lots of listening as a parent, and then helping her to realize that, you know, ultimately this is temporary, we all hope, that this will change, and then seeing, are there any other ways that she can either establish new friendships or maintain the friendships that she had from school? Because again, a lot of her school friends, you'd expect, would be in similar situations if they've also started college remotely, that while they may not be in the same college as her, they're probably in exactly the same boat. And so it might be that even just a shared sense of how crap this is amongst all her friends might help her to feel less alone.
Yeah, keeping in touch with people and keep talking. We've another teenage problem for you, David. My 16-year-old son is smoking weed. He is open to me about it, and his argument is that it's better than alcohol. I don't want to condone it, but what do I do? Do I stop giving him money? Should I be worried?
I think any parent should be worried if your son or daughter is openly smoking weed, because irrespective of any of the arguments that get put forward in terms of whether, you know, cannabis or weed should be legalized or not, at the moment it's not legal, which means that her son is supporting the whole drugs industry in whatever small way he is. But that's the reality of it. You know, people are getting killed and murdered because of his desire and need to smoke weed. And I think, you know, as a parent, what is clearly, you know, obvious if he's 16 is that this mom now cannot prevent him from smoking weed, because all he needs to do is just leave the house. And of course, the mom has no control over whether he smokes weed or not. I think as a parent, though, if you have a strong value about drugs, then you continue to hold to your values. And so if this mom doesn't condone smoking weed, well, then don't condone smoking weed. Let your son know that he's doing something that you disapprove of, that he's doing something that's dangerous, that he's doing something that's promoting, you know, crime, serious crime and murder within the country. And so that, you know, you don't have to approve of him smoking weed if you really believe that it's the wrong thing for him to do. And you know, there are lots of bits of research that will show that, you know, smoking weed is not good for teenagers. You know, drinking alcohol is not good for teenagers either. But, you know, for whatever reason, alcohol has remained legal in this country. And so, you know, again, the culture that we have is that everybody drinks, and so a lot of teenagers will drink, but that still doesn't make it right. And I think as a parent, that's the message that you have to just keep giving, that you don't approve, that you don't think it's right, and that ultimately what he's doing is supporting the drugs industry, and you know, he's never welcome to have weed in the house, he's never welcome to smoke weed around the house, he's never welcome to smoke weed around his family.
And what about the money question? Does she stop giving him money?
So, I would, if it was me, I wouldn't be paying to support his drug habit. If you know that it's quite likely that if you give him pocket money of a fiver or a tenner a week, that that's getting spent on weed. The dilemma for her son will be, where does he access the money? And again, you know, there are plenty of stories of teenagers getting themselves into significant problems, you know, with their desire to smoke weed, that they offer to sell a bit just to support their own habit. And that, of course, then creates even bigger problems. But I think it's one of those ones where you keep sitting down with him and you keep communicating about it, and you tell him why you're really worried about him having this money, and you don't think it's a good idea for him to have your money to spend on it. And if he wants to go and get himself a part-time job, or he wants to, you know, find some other way to access money, that, you know, it is clear to her that she can't stop what he does outside the home, but that still, because, you know, she doesn't think drugs are good, she's very against them, she doesn't condone it, she doesn't condone his use, and she disapproves of his behaviour, and he's not welcome to do it at home.
Well, let's go back down then to the younger age cohort, David, for this last one. This is about a 10-year-old girl who has been having what she describes as a sick feeling in her tummy for the last year now. She's been medically assessed. She was referred to a psychotherapist for coping mechanisms, and I encourage her to do a meditation relaxation technique when she feels like this. It's almost every night before she falls asleep, and this parent would like to know if you have any other suggestions. The girl describes it as a feeling of mixing in her tummy, but she never gets physically sick.
So certainly if she's been medically assessed and nobody thinks that it's physical, then it is quite likely that it's anxiety driven. And so we know when children get anxious that they can get adrenaline released into their system. The adrenaline is designed to get the muscles of their legs and arms ready to either run away from a danger or to fight against a danger. And so in order to do that, the blood flow within the body changes. And so extra blood is pumped to the legs and the arms. And in the process of that, because our bodies are a closed system, as I understand it, the blood is drained a little bit from the stomach and small intestine. So in essence, our digestive system shuts down for the period of time that we're anxious, because this extra blood is more usefully sent to the legs and to the arms. And so the physicality then of feeling sick or feeling, you know, nauseous or queasy, I think is a very real thing when we get anxious, because I think it is all about our digestive system shutting down. And so for a 10-year-old, it might actually help her to understand that that physical link between what might be anxiety and then this sick feeling in her stomach. And then, as the mum is already doing, she's doing meditation or relaxation techniques at bedtime. You know, a breathing technique might be really good. Certainly guided visualizations are a great thing to do at bedtime. And then beyond all of that, it might be useful to try and work out, well, I wonder what it is that she's anticipating for the next day that's leaving her feeling anxious going to bed. Or perhaps it's just about the actual separation again, even though she's 10, you know, of going to sleep at night. It's sometimes a big deal for children. So, you know, sometimes understanding the cause of the anxiety will help, because it might guide us in terms of something practical that we can do. But in the absence of understanding exactly where the anxiety might be coming from, helping her daughter to understand how anxiety is affecting her body, and then learning good relaxation techniques, guided meditations, all that kind of stuff will absolutely be the way to go.
Okay. Do you think more professional help there might be advisable?
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be useful for the mum to talk to the psychotherapist that her daughter's been attending, to see what kind of stuff has the psychotherapist already tried to address in terms of coping strategies and stuff, because it may be that it's all there. But, you know, it depends. Sometimes even with 10-year-olds, you know, the 10-year-old might be there on their own. If it's play therapy based, you know, the daughter might be there on her own. And so sometimes it's useful for parents, particularly at that age, to be present, to have a sense of what's going on, because then they can support whatever learning is happening, particularly if it's that, I'm going to say, psychoeducational type stuff. It's really helpful for parents to understand themselves what might be going on, so that they can then support their kids when they're at home. So certainly start with talking to the psychotherapist, and then if the psychotherapist feels that he or she has done as much as he or she can do, then it might be about following through and getting other kind of psychological support, perhaps. Yeah.
David, thank you very much as always. That's Dr. David Coleman, and David will be back with us again in a couple of weeks. So if you have any questions for him, you can get them into us now and we'll put them to him the next time he's on. todaycb@rte.ie. Now we're going to tell you how to stop buying fast fashion and start upcycling your clothes after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.